How are you? Welcome in. It is a Patriots Monday here on WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, and you at 617-779-7937. Lots to get to today after a disaster in the square mile of London. A brutal loss for your New England Patriots. Despite a pretty good game from Drake May, Patriots now a six-game losing skid. Type of game that you just look at and wonder what is going on with this team and how could it go so badly so quick, especially, Andy, considering, as many have pointed out today from the morning show up until middays, up until right now, is that you looked pretty good to start off. You looked like an actual competent football team. You looked like an offense that had a plan, right? I mean, it was like they had the walkthrough and everything. They had a game plan. They had guys they were looking for. They had certain play calls and rhythms and cadences that it seemed like were indicative of an offense that we hadn't really seen yet, an offense that strikes first, that's efficient, that's able to go out there and pick up yards, get in the end zone, get into field goal range against a bad Jacksonville defense. And then the second quarter started, and it was over. I mean, that's really all you can say. Giving up 22 points in that second quarter was abysmal, and it didn't really get much better after that, despite some bright spots there from Drake May. We'll get to his day. We'll talk to him today as well. We'll also speak at some point with Jonathan Jones. Can't give you an exact time on either one of them yet because, well, they just got back from England, and we're not sure exactly what their schedules are, but that's the agenda here for today. Where do you want to start, Andy? Where do you start with a game like this?
The embarrassing part of it, like the embarrassment of we saw the worst football game between Miami and New England. Miami gets the win. You get a chance to go over to London to get away a little bit, neutral site game against a team that is playing really poorly. As Kendrick Bourne said leading into the week, right? Two bad teams playing bad football. We'll see what happens. Well, one of them got their get-right game, and the Patriots are clearly becoming a get-right opponent for a lot of teams. That's why I continue. I don't want to hear any more about winnable games and the schedule softening up. There's nothing softer than you as the New England Patriots. Your head coach called you out for it. And no, I don't believe you're just playing soft. They're a soft football team, mentally and physically. On the field, defensively, there are a few things that are more demoralizing than another team running the ball on you and never actually hitting big plays.
Nope.
Never. 13-yard run, longest run for Tank Bigsby. Most of the time it was like six. I can get six whenever I want.
He's not particularly fast.
Nope.
Like, he's kind of just this plodding guy who gets into the – and it really, I mean – it's not like he had to do that much. They ran up the middle every single time.
Yes.
They weren't running sweeps.
You could have done it.
They weren't going off tackle. They were just, boom, right behind the center, right behind the guard.
Yep.
And there was nothing the Patriots could do about
it. And guys would get, you know, the yards after contact. The contact would be like 7 yards downfield.
Yep.
It's not like he's breaking an arm tackle. No, there'd be a nice little gap or alley, and they'd show you the replay behind the camera angle, and you're like, oh, yeah, he just really had to run straight ahead. There wasn't a lot of skill involved with that. And I don't know where this team goes, because this team has problems across the board on so many levels. On the field is one thing. That's obvious on Sunday for 3 hours.
Yep.
But all this social media crap, the culture crap, the coach calling them out, then the coach having to backpedal and say, no, I didn't say we're a soft team. We played softly. Like, I don't know what to make of any of this. I'll tell you, there's two things that I feel pretty certain about coming out of that game. And I know it's quick to do both of these things.
I don't think it is.
One of them.
I don't even know what you're going to say, and I don't think it's too quick to
say. One's positive and one's negative. Which you want first?
Let's go with the positive first.
Positive. I'm more positive than ever that you have a franchise quarterback.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say I'm
no.
positive the team sucks.
No.
Or something.
Like, I'm all in on Drake May.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
you're in the game, so to speak, right? Like, you have a guy that gets you in the game of modern football. I loved that they came out and they let him throw. I loved that he was under pressure and he had to run and made some play with his legs, and he's, you know, just getting past Dizer diving, and he's just getting the foot past, whatever. Love that. Now the flip side. And I know this is premature and disrespectful, but this is the world we live in. We live it every day. Everybody talks about us, and your trolls are going to tell us how much we suck and all this thing.
I don't know about that. No one's ever told me that.
Oh, you should read the internet more.
Okay, I will.
I am not sure. This is the first time I wonder if Gerard Mayo will be the head coach in 2025.
Mm.
I just...
You're there already.
It's too dysfunctional. It's too much of a mess. Now, maybe heads will roll beneath him. You know, they do that thing where the owner meets with the coach and then, oh, suddenly we've decided to fire a coordinator or something.
Yeah.
Kind of a job-saving act by the head coach, because the coaching on this team is bad on in all levels. because he doesn't run either side, correct? We agree on that?
Doesn't seem like it.
That seems like DeMarcus Covington is doing the deal on defense. We know Alex Van Pelt.
Doing it poorly, by the way.
Very poorly.
Yeah.
Where's Mina Kimes talking about this defense? I'm still waiting for Dan Orlovsky to talk about Drake May and Mina Kimes to talk about this defense. How come people just throw stuff out there and never acknowledge when they were 100%
Again,
wrong?
That's something I've never done and will never do, and I don't understand why people would do that. Yeah.
But am I premature in this?
It is a focus point.
I thought there was no way that Jerod Mayo could be in trouble because we all knew he was doing it. Oh, it's a multi-year thing.
Yep.
We're going to win. I don't know if it's this year or next year. And then Robert Kraft, in the Mike Reese story before the Jets game, it was something about, we know there's tough times ahead of us, but I think I have the right people and all that. It is getting ugly, and it is getting ugly fast. And correct me if I'm wrong, they're 1-6, right?
You are not wrong. They're 1-6, yes.
So that means they haven't reached the midway point of the season yet.
Nope.
Ugliness is still way around the corner or over the horizon.
2 weeks for that. I mean, it's 17 games, but yeah, it's next week or the week after, I'd say.
What is ugly going to look like if this isn't ugly yet? Because pressure is going to build. It's not going to get better. And I agree with Jerod
Mayo. I think
Mayo.
This is ugly. I think this.
Oh, it's ugly.
You're playing better teams from here on out, and losing like this to better teams isn't as bad. Losing like this to the Jaguars makes it extra ugly.
What about getting embarrassed by better teams?
Well, you got
more so than
you got embarrassed by the Jaguars.
See, no. I think there could be true embarrassments on the horizon. Cowboys, Saints last year type
49-7 type of stuff. Yeah,
where like everybody's having fun, or what the Lions did 2 weeks ago, where the other team is like running trick plays, really just to take away your manhood, to show you that they can do it. I think that's the exact opposite. I think there's tougher games on the horizon. You could have one of those Josh Allen games where he never punts, and he just makes you as you know what in front of the fans here or the fans there or the fans in both places. So. No, these winnable games, soft schedule, all this, you're living it, and it's as ugly as it can be. They stink on the field. They seem to kind of stink in the locker room, right? I mean, there's a lot of finger-pointing.
In the locker room, on Instagram, pretty much anywhere. It seems like there's a lot of dysfunction here, which we'll document it all.
So Evan Lazar, does he deserve an apology?
Yes, absolutely.
Mutiny,
he does.
Mutiny
he
may does. Have been the wrong word.
Mm.
Mutiny, I don't know. But the...
Well, the mutiny was about putting May in, right? It wasn't about this other stuff. Like the mutiny
right.
was the mutiny was like, hey, how come Drake May's not out there with us right now? How come he's not part of this? And I don't know if a mutiny was about to happen for that or not, but either way, there's a lot of bad feelings in that
right.
clubhouse. Yeah.
Jacoby Brissett told us it was bad journalism by a guy that has no idea what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he had no idea what he was talking about?
I think he's starting to feel
the other way.
I think it's probably
like
the other
that
way,
he
yeah.
not that it was sourced, that it was just observed. And he said it. I was in that locker room. People were like pointing fingers. We keep getting that. To the point where Jerod Mayo has to clarify, well, when Kendrick Bourne talks, is he talking about the off-the-field incidents that have crept up lately? Are we talking about locker room incidents? Are we talking about guys having egos? Are we talking about guys getting sick and their belly doesn't feel good because maybe they stayed out too late?
Mm-hmm.
That's a working theory we have on this show already. Didn't strike me. I'm going to credit Brian, whether he wants the credit or not. The whole people shouldn't be out late and need to eat better. And can you tie that circumstantially to Pop Douglas being sick and not being able to fulfill his commitments to the offense?
Well, who else is he talking about?
I have no idea.
There's a wide receiver in the room with him who he knows and maybe was hanging out. I don't know. I don't know if they're – I don't know what they're doing. But I do know that it was a wide receiver saying it. And when you had the Devon Godchow and Aquale yesterday, he's been talking about how these other guys on the defense aren't doing what they're doing. They're talking about their own side.
That's how I
feel like they're talking about the people that they are playing with directly. That's what it seems like. That's where it seems like a lot of these problems are.
Absolutely. And
it's not the defense is blaming the offense. The offense is blaming the defense.
No.
They're blaming each other because they all stink.
Again, I'll go back to it. As much as it pains me because I don't get along with the guy all that well, Evan Lazar said the offense is fighting the offense and the defense is fighting the defense when he made those comments.
And that's true.
And that seems like what's happening, which is non-traditional. Isn't it more traditional and normal for the offense to point fingers at the defense?
Yeah, these guys are holding this back.
Right.
Look at this. I can't
like last year.
Exactly.
When it was like, I guess we have to give up no points if we're ever going to win a football game around here. Now everybody stinks, right? They're soft across the board.
The only person with any standing to even say something like that is Drake May.
Yeah.
He's the only one who can go out there and be like, all of you guys on the defense, you guys and you guys, you're all making me look bad.
And coaches,
right now,
too.
They're teetering on mutiny in that locker room.
And I don't know if mutiny was the word he necessarily wanted, but other than that, I think the spirit of his comment is being proven more and more true by the week because this team is teetering on something. And I don't know how much lower it can go. He just got embarrassed on an international stage against a one-win football team who I think there was a shot was going to fire their coach if they lost this game.
I think there was a big shot of that.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you just saved a guy's job. In doing so, maybe you started to put your own guy's job in jeopardy because I think Jerod Mayo, I think he probably knew, thought he knew what he was in for, and now reality has hit.
Yeah.
And this is way harder and way more stressful and anxious and everything than it could have been. And he's now seeing what went wrong with Matt Patricia in Detroit or Josh McDaniels in, well, Denver and
everywhere.
Vegas.
Yeah,
right.
Everywhere he went. Yep.
Because it snowballs, right?
Man,
losing.
Genie and Cleveland, all the guys.
Right.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I give Mayo credit. I agree with him 1,000%. Anybody can lead when you're 6-1.
Right.
It's easy to lead from in front. But when you're 1-6, this is where we're going to find out what Jerod Mayo is and what kind of relationship he has with not just the people beneath him, the players and the coaches, but the people above him, the Crafts, and how much they are in for the long haul of problematic games, probably problematic days at this very building when they look and go, what time's the crowd going to get here for this 1 o'clock game? Because
right.
It's 1:30 and there's nobody in the seats kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I think you're right on the edge of that. If not there already, I mean, the season's over. Like, no one's going to be coming to these games with any urgency. It'll be something to do on Sunday. You're not expecting there to be any kind of push at the end of the season. I'll be surprised they win another game this year at this point, honestly. That's sort of what I'm looking at. As good as Drake May looks, and that's what's really upsetting about this, is that you seem to have the quarterback.
Yeah, you do.
Out of all the quarterbacks who played yesterday and Thursday, he was like top three in terms of his stats and numbers, his completion percentage, yards, touchdowns, no interceptions, rushing yard, like all of that. There's really only a couple of guys who had comparable or better numbers than him in the whole league that played yesterday. And I know he was playing against the Jaguars, but that's not really the point. The point is the offensive line was still bad, still a bunch of penalties. Penalties on guys like Hunter Henry, which you can't be having that.
And
Jalen Polk still dropping everything. Pop Douglas is on the sideline crapping himself. Like nothing was really working, and the kid still had a really nice day.
Dan Marino-esque. He didn't get the 3 touchdowns he needed to fulfill whatever that stat requirement was, but there was another stat making the rounds.
What are you talking about?
The 3 touchdowns in each of your first 2 starts. It was only Dan Marino and him that could have done it.
I see. Okay, right.
Yeah. He didn't get the 3rd touchdown, but yards-wise, I believe the yard total and touchdown total, only he and Dan Marino have started their first 2 games as well as this. And he cleaned it up. He had no turnovers.
Yep.
Not saying he couldn't have had turnovers.
He should have had 2 interceptions, but yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm sick of should have haves because everybody tells me Patrick Mahomes should have had 800 interceptions the last 3 years or whatever. So if you don't, you don't. They don't count unless they're actually intercepted. So Drake May. I get another positive, too.
Oh?
The Andy plan's coming together nicely for that number 1 pick.
That's looking to be the case, yes.
So that's good and
bad,
though.
You're in the driver's seat for that right now at 1-6.
Yeah. It could go south. You got winnable games, as people will tell me in the coming weeks.
Not going to go south.
And the other issue there is I'm a little less excited about that in light of the top of the draft not looking like there's going to be this bidding war for quarterbacks. Your guy, Shadur, maybe. I don't know whether
Cam Ward. Yeah.
Maybe. Like, you need somebody to become the front runner for that number 1 pick so you can trade down. Although the problem there is freaking Banks had a bad game the other day, so now we're back to Will Campbell. Boy, when you start analyzing the draft in October, it's really problematic.
Yeah, it is. And there's still a lot of college football to be played here, too. So we'll see. You know, injuries can happen. Guys can suddenly make big pushes for the Heisman at the end there. I mean, I think there's good quarterbacks in college football right now. And what it's really going to be about is the desperation of the NFL teams.
Yes.
That's what's going to kick this into overdrive.
Carolina, we're talking to you.
If there's a bunch of guys out there, then yeah, you're gonna want, if you have the first overall pick, one of them is going to be considered the best one. And that's something that you're going to be able to hopefully flip and do what you want with. I don't know exactly. Either way, it seems like you're headed right for that. And when you mention Jerod Mayo, just not to jump off that topic real quick, and him potentially being in trouble here, I wasn't really of that mind, really, for the whole season, thinking this is way too tied into Kraft, way too tied into his decision and his ego and sort of all of that, and you can't just give up on him after 1 year after saying it's like, you know, how I pick my wives is how I pick Jerod Mayo. But the way they're losing, you know, if you were losing these games by a score or two, then I think you'd have it. Like, if they lost that game by 8 points yesterday, if it was a 1-score game and they lost, we'd be looking at it like, wow, you lost to the Jaguars, that sucks. But, hey, you were in it, and the QB had a good game. You lost that by 16 points. You got blown out by the Texans by 3 scores. You got blown out by the Jets. You got blown out by the night. Like, you're getting blown out every week.
And for me, it's not even really as much about the on-the-field stuff, because I think the on-the-field, I thought this team stunk. It's why I thought they could go 0-17 as of May.
Yep.
And that was reading the talent on the field. The issue for me is you do stink, and you're facing all these challenges. You're soft on the field. And then we've had 3 separate incidents with negative interactions with the police. We've had at least three incidents of social media, questionable usage of that. I mean, we got a guy, KJ Osborne, yesterday who's bitching that he was told he was going to be inactive and then he had to be active and then he caught the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you bitching about? You got a chance to go on the field and compete. You're going to bitch about it on social media? Like, what do they owe you?
I still don't understand why he did, why he put that out there.
I don't either.
Like, his agent doing it, still, I'd be like, hey, man, like, that's our personal text conversation. Don't put that on Instagram. And then he's like, yeah, let me repurpose this and put it out there, too. It's like, no, KJ, no.
That's generation.
Don't do that.
And then to extend it further, Giardi says that the guy's not even really his agent. He's never actually negotiated a contract, according to the NFLPA.
Well, they're just good friends.
He's like some sort of advisor or something. But... so you have issues in your locker room, you have issues on social media, you have issues in the community, you have issues on the football field. What exactly is Gerard Mayo handling and taking control of? And this isn't meant to be a personal teardown of him. I think it's a really difficult job he's trying to do. When you lose, it goes south in a hurry. We've seen it everywhere. That's just the reality of the situation. He wasn't overly prepared for this. I mean, he's been a coach for 5+ years,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, Robert made the decision before he had ever coached a game.
That's true.
So I think he was put in a tough position. Now, he took it. Don't get me wrong. He took it. He accepted it. He wanted it. But this whole leader of men, the leadership is lacking on the field, off the field, and in the locker room. Right? Like, that's
absolutely
fair. That's just factual. That's not a pot shot at Gerard Mayo.
It seemed like
Gerard
he
Mayo.
Had something after week one. And since then, it has seemed like he has no control or influence on these guys whatsoever is what it seems like.
And it's everybody, in a sense. Like, Hunter Henry. False start again. Okay, so that undisciplined level with a captain.
Mm-hmm.
Devon Godshaw, who's a veteran, longtime player. I don't know where he's at in terms of how he feels about this team. Because then I look at it, and you're right. When you talk about, when they talk, you tend to wonder, is it people in their room? Mm-hmm. If a receiver talks, is he looking around his receiver room?
Right.
Well, if Daniel Okwale talks, I look around the D-line room. And we earlier in the year, we were questioning Keon White, and is he freelancing? And his production has dropped off the map since the first couple weeks. But I would look at Devon Godshaw.
Trevor Lawrence, I don't even think he had to wash his uniform. His uniform was cleaner than my mother's kitchen floor after that game. They didn't even come close to touching him. Like, that was ridiculous. I thought at the very least, all right, you got a Jaguars O-line here that you can maybe exploit a little bit. And he dropped back to pass and had all day long.
The pass rush was non-existent?
Did not exist.
But if... so who held out in training camp, correct me, I believe it was Devon Godshaw. I believe people tell me he's like one of the best run-stopping defensive linemen in football, correct?
Yeah, Bill said that.
And you can't stop the run?
Nope.
So is it a possibility that he's part of the problem, not part of the solution? And if I'm a teammate of his, and this isn't fair, I know this, but I'm just going to say it anyway. If I'm a teammate of his and I look over and he's always recording podcasts and he's a fashionista and he's always got the scarf and the beret on, I'm like... maybe dial it down a notch and just, I don't know, help us stop the run.
Best defensive lineman in the league.
Yeah, best defensive lineman in the league. And they just had the ball run down their throat by not Derrick Henry and the Ravens. Not one of, you know, not the 49ers with Christian McCaffrey or like, it was the freaking Jaguars and Tank Bigsby.
Yep.
At 4 years, death by 1,000 cuts, I believe their head coach put it. Maybe the defensive lineman, Devon Godshaw, should stop one of those 1,000 cuts, a couple of them, just help out. And I'm going to get all the Patriot fans going to be like, no Barmore, no Bentley, no Peppers. Okay. You got Godshaw.
Yep.
You got Tavai. You got Duggar or Duggar, whatever your preference is.
Mm-hmm.
You still have guys that can make plays. You still have
who should be able to do something against that. Who should be able to adjust to that. Yes.
Right.
That's not some exotic thing that, oh, these guys don't know how to defend it. It is running up the middle. Over and over again, 17 times in a row.
And it's not like they're one of these teams where they spread you out with so many weapons that you get soft up the middle. You put Gonzalez and Brian Thomas, and you're like, well, I'm going to do that. Your guy had a nice drop, by the way, over the middle, Christian Kirk.
Kirk did, yes, he did.
Stud receiver, my ass.
Yeah, you know, he was all right. Thomas had a great, great catch.
I think
that catch he had with Gonzalez where he tried to knock it out, that was a great play.
I feel better and better about my assertion that he is going to be better than Malik Nabers and one of the top 5 receivers in football in his career.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see about that.
I would take him in a heartbeat.
If he stays in Jacksonville, maybe not. But either way, yeah, we're off and running here. It's a Patriots Monday, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got room for you here on the phone lines if you'd like to react to what we just saw yesterday very, very early in London. We'll be speaking with Jonathan Jones. We'll be speaking with Drake May over the course of the day. Not exactly sure what time yet. We'll let you know as soon as we do. When we come back, we'll talk about the way this game started and how good Drake May looked for most of it and
where it all went wrong. May's Day, in retrospect, taking it all into account. That's all coming up right after Joe Braverman tells you what's trending. Drake May leading a touchdown drive to open the game, getting Patriots fans all excited. I was excited. I heard that. I said, oh, my goodness. It only took one game, and the offense is fixed.
Damn right.
One game, well, two games. It's the beginning of the second game. They have one game in the books, and now the second game starts. The offense is fixed. Drake May is making completions to Pop Douglas all up and down before he had to leave the game with the bubble guts there. He was hitting Hunter Henry. Stevenson was picking up yards. There was that. I think Douglas had a penalty on that opening drive, too, which wasn't great, but we'll get to the penalties here in a minute.
But all I didn't see the replay. That might have been one of those modern nitpicky ones where the receiver in motion.
It was an illegal shift or something.
Well, I think it's that thing where if you, like, rotate it all, they call you for you can't be moving forward at the snap. It's been one of their points of emphasis, which they can stick right up their keister. But no, I was very happy with the start, not surprising, because they came out, they're throwing the ball. Even I know they ran on the first play, but it was a pass play, it was a scramble. And it was like, okay, Alex Van Pelt is just going to – he's got a guy that likes to just throw the ball, likes to be in control back there. Let's build around that. And I thought we were well on our way. And then Alex Van Pelt started doing first down runs. And do you know what the first down runs got you?
Yes, I do, but let me refresh my memory.
3, minus 1, 1, minus 4. Those are your first half, first down runs.
Great.
What are we doing? Throw the ball. Let him cook. Even though I do think, you mentioned DeMario Douglas, I do think that was a blow to the offense. I do think.
It definitely was.
Like, not just the receptions. I think he had a couple catches early, but they were doing the motions, the orbit motions, the fake orbit motions. Like, they were moving him around. It was like, oh. The offense is kind of evolving a little bit here. And then when he went out, I do think that cut into what they either thought they could do or could do. I don't know where it was like self-fulfilling prophecy. We're like, oh, we can't do that now, so we'll just run the ball again. Mm-hmm. It's like they regressed to their boring early season ways. But that first, I was excited. You know what I was rooting for?
What?
A win. That's how fun that start was.
Whoa.
No, I swear to God.
Whoa.
I swear to God.
Andy
it was
Hart
10-0.
Was looking for a victory.
Drake May's cooking, and I'm like,
oh, Mr. 0-17 over here.
I'm like, F it. We'll figure out how to get the number one pick some other day.
Right.
Let's just get a win across the pond. Let's get a feel good. He was well on his way. I was like,
I was rooting for a feel good, too, the whole time. Yeah.
Let's have a Drake May day. Let's have him throw for 400 yards over four quarters, four touch, like the whole thing. And then Alex Van Pelt was like, not so fast. Your fun is over. We're done here. We're running for no gain.
How about this for a number? In the first two drives, the Patriots ran 23 plays and held the ball for 13 minutes, just about, 6:28 and 6:31. So just under 13 minutes. Their entire time of possession in the game was 26:45. That was half of their time possessing the ball was in those first two drives for the entire game. That tells you a lot right there. And listen, it's a step up. I hate to even put it this way, but that's a massive step up from offensively what we've seen. They were ready. They were prepared. They had a plan. They were out there executing. It was a real football team. Like, you haven't seen that really with these guys. They got off to a 10-0 lead. A two-score lead. When's this team ever had a two-score lead? It's like, you know, like you see all that and you go, wow, there's really some potential here. And for the rest of the game, it was gone. I mean, there was really nothing. And as good as Drake May looked, I heard Jones saying this in the midday show a little bit, we can't get in the habit of just giving him a pass no matter what. There were some possessions throughout that where I thought he wasn't exactly on point and some of those accuracy issues popped up again. I know, tough to say that pretty quickly, but he's not a problem. I mean, he was the one bright spot of the entire game. And while he wasn't perfect, I'm not expecting him to be perfect, so I'm willing to look the other way on some of the smaller problems that he had.
Oh, you mean the guy in his second career game?
Exactly. And a lot of those problems, by the way, were his other receivers either dropping the ball, penalties on his veteran tight end, things that weren't really his fault, and a run game that once again could not put one foot in front of the other unless it was him out there running. And he was the only guy that could pick up any yards. Like, that can't happen. Ramondre Stevenson's back. I know he didn't practice all week. You don't have to practice all week to pick up 50 yards. I mean, he couldn't do anything. This was another week where your offense was completely one-dimensional, and that's asking too much of Drake May to just go out there and throw 100 times and win the game, even if it's against a bad team like Jacksonville. He's not ready for that yet. He's ready to give you what he's giving you, which is still very good.
Yeah, because what did he throw? 37 passes?
I think he was
and some of them were late.
Of 37, I
so
want to
37
say,
yeah. passes.
26 of 37.
I mean, you're right. Even as much of Drake May fan as I am, do I want him throwing the ball 50 times in his second NFL start?
No.
Even against the Jags defense. But the barometer I keep using for Drake May is very simple. If everybody had played at the level Drake May did yesterday, what would have happened?
I think they would have won.
Probably
they would have won
easily.
That game. If the defense played as well as you,
yes.
I mean, come on, yeah.
No, I'm not looking for greatness. You can make a mistake here, make a mistake there, but just play at a representative professional level, and that's what you got from the quarterback position yesterday.
Yep.
You got good play at the quarterback position, and I would argue, more often than not, I feel like in the last 4+ years, they don't lose often when they get good quarterback play. The problem has been the quarterback. They've had bad quarterback play from Cam Newton to Bailey Zappe to Mac Jones. And when they got competitive quarterback play, they usually won. Now you're getting competitive quarterback play and you're not really competitive. You get doubled up on, right? Like you're not, it's a 2-score loss. And that's problematic. That's troublesome. And that's really too negative for my liking.
No, listen, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, it's negative or not, that's the truth. I also think that in the drop-off you're seeing in the defense, you're seeing an improvement in the offense based on, you know, what you had last year at the quarterback position and really all around. I'd say that these last two Drake May games have been offense in New England at a level they haven't been at since Brady was here, or maybe since the first Mac Jones year. But even that, I'd say May looks better than Mac looked in
some
that
of the plays.
Year.
That's the other thing that was jumping out to me.
That touchdown to Osborne was a great play. That was a great throw.
The throw to Hunter Henry, which I actually was like, is this a good idea? Okay, you got it through. I guess it's a good idea. I don't know if I would have done that. The throw down the left side to Booty. So now we got a right side booty. We got a left side booty. We got two booties are enjoying.
Sounds like a Rex and Effects.
Yes.
Right there,
No, they're making plays, and there could have been more. Hey, Polk, mix in a play. I know everybody's going to be like, oh, that was defended. Yeah, so was Hunter Henry down the middle of the field, and he caught it.
Yep.
You're allowed to catch the ball even when there's a defender near you or around you. Like, you're a professional,
too.
That's
George Pickens. You see his catch in the end zone? That was ridiculous.
But he had multiples last night.
Yeah, he was
awesome. Better than I thought he was. He's a legit stud receiver,
he is.
George Pickens.
He's a jackass, but he's definitely a stud.
Hey, Jalen Polk, I can guarantee you don't have better hands than George Pickens.
Yeah, I can.
Because Jalen Polk,
agree with that.
You got to catch the ball sooner or later. You want to bench him? I'm all for benching
him. I wanted to bench him for this game.
Me too, but now more so.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go take some calls here before we go to break. We'll start with Barry in New Bedford, who has a thought on Jerod Mayo. Hello, Barry.
Hey, guys. This is starting to remind me so much of David Culley when Houston hired him. You got a guy who was a career assistant. Oh, he's had longer in the league, limited experience as a coordinator and a CEO of running an entire a team operation. Every week it's something new, whether it's offsides on a kickoff, an opening kickoff, 12 men on a punt. All these things come back to Mayo because it's a lack of discipline. It's a lack of controlling the operation. Where are the adjustments in the second half between him and DeMarcus Covington trying to stop the run? Where are the adjustments? I know you're missing pieces. I know that Bentley's out and Barmore's out, and you have missing pieces. But you have to find ways to plug guys in. It just seems to me he's lost control of this entire operation. And the press conference yesterday where he's going after guys. We, you know, the off-field stuff's come. We don't know what's going on in practice. We hear all the stuff was taking place on Twitter and Instagram. We hear stuff, you know, guys getting arrested by the cops, people getting pulled over by police because they popped up on TikTok. But what's going on in practice, we don't know. It just seems to me, and this is what bothers me about Kraft. In normal situations, you hire a GM and the GM hires the coach. This was completely different. You gave the job to Mayo and you promoted Elliott Wolf. Then why not let Elliott Wolf pick the coach? Because if Elliott Wolf had a chance to pick the coach, I don't think it would have been Jerod Mayo.
You might be right about that, and thanks for the call. I think that there's a lot to question about the whole process of not interviewing anybody else, of knowing you're going to just have Jerod Mayo, and I do think there's something to be said about the GM, and listen, the GM and the head coach were the same person here for 20 years, so it was maybe not exactly an obvious thing for the Crafts when they were going about this process, but that's usually how it's done. You bring the GM in, he hires his coach, they talk about their philosophy for building the roster, and that's the way it goes. This was sort of just some retreads who are already here, who were promoted internally, and who, despite wanting to do everything so differently from the way Belichick used to do it, brought back all of his old players with his scouts and his assistant coaches and all these other people except for him and his son, basically. I mean, and Alex Van Pelt, I guess. And that's it. I mean, really, it wasn't that much of a change as much as they wanted it to be. They wanted it to seem that way, but they also didn't want to lose whatever sense of control they felt they could have over people who were indebted to them in a way, right? Like, you're giving Jerod Mayo this big promotion. He owes you all this. Elliott Wolf probably wasn't going to go out there and get another GM job. You gave him that thing. So you kind of have that that control over what they do and who they work with and how they're supposed to feel about it. Like, do you think Elliot Wolf is sitting there going, man, if I just had a chance to hire my own coach, he's probably thinking, wow, I got a chance to be a GM. I don't care who the coach is. I'll just put the players out there. Yeah. You know, it's that type of thing, and I think that's what they wanted.
The funny thing is, it's almost a Belichickian philosophy. All these young coaches that he hired as interns and then raised and developed and kept and promoted and brought back was sort of his people, right? Yeah. People that he could trust. I think he
and
called
now
them.
They're all his podcast co-hosts.
Right, and those are his dependables, as he right. calls them. But that's sort of the mentality it seemed like they took. The one thing I will say, the caller brought up David Culley, and I don't remember all the details, but I think
he was a one-and-done in Houston, right?
And I think he was brought in the midst of turmoil to kind of be a grandfather figure, to be like a positive.
Was this like in the wake of the Easterby stuff?
I think
all that,
Easterby,
right?
Deshaun Watson. There was rumors they were going to hire McCown because he was a Bible guy and they wanted a Bible. And I think they needed sort of a soft face, like just a likable grandpa who
and he
be
worked
the coach.
Under Reed, I think, right? Isn't he a Reed guy? It wasn't like he was nobody.
No, he had credentials.
He had credentials, yeah.
But I think there was an intention there. This is a little different. Like, you didn't perform a search. You made the decision 5 years earlier. Then you put it in writing, which seems to have expedited the end of the Belichick tenure here as well. And that's a part of the narrative. And then you mix in Mike Vrabel becomes available, and that kind of piqued everybody's interest outside the organization. Not necessarily inside, but fans, media were like, hey, that Vrabel guy was a pretty good coach down in Tennessee, and he's got ties to you. He's part of the family. He's been in your world. And I think that maybe undercut a little bit of the credibility of Gerard Mayo. And now when Gerard Mayo looks like he's a little over his head, that only strengthens the idea that, hey, maybe you should have hired an experienced coach like Mike Vrabel. So some of the circumstantial factors are also lumping on. But the biggest issue is the team is a mess right now.
Yeah.
And the head coach, as Devin McCourty said last night, when you have issues that are big picture issues, toughness, culture,
right,
everybody looks at the head coach. Whether he's your friend or not, Gerard Mayo's the head coach, and he's the one that's going to be in the spotlight.
Yep. You mentioned Bill Belichick. He was on Pat McAfee today, and he had a lot to say. He's had a lot to say about the defense, about Gerard Mayo's comments after the game. And, he did everything short of showing up in a Trevor Lawrence jersey, I'd say, on the show. So we'll get to that. We'll get to his comments and play them for you right after this. Bill Belichick on the Pat McAfee show this afternoon. Didn't have a football to spike, but was basically spiking the football all over the Patriots' grave as the season's essentially over, I think we can all agree. And after not having much to say about the team after that win in week one against the Bengals, he's come out of his shell a little bit, and now he's just taking full-on shots at Gerard Mayo. Listen, you can talk about how the defense was better last year. It definitely was. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anybody would argue with you. This defense is soft this year. I mean, it is, right? Like, are we just going to say, well, because they were good last year, they can't be soft this year? That was a soft performance, and I don't think it was all coaching on defense. There's, I think, some element to it, maybe. The scheme's not right. They're not going and taking away your most effective part of the offense like Belichick used to try and do. And I say try and do because those last couple of years, I mean, it's not like they were the best defense in the league or anything. And I think last year they feasted on some worse teams and looked better. They can't even do that this year at all, though. This year they suck against bad offenses, good offense. Doesn't make a difference. They're out there getting pushed around. And after the way they beat the Bengals in week one, what were we saying? They're better conditioned. They're tackling. They're pumped up to play for Gerard Mayo. All those things that seemed like they were there in that first week. Here we are. It's over a month later, and they're nowhere to be found. And Belichick is having himself a grand old time out there with Pat McAfee.
Yeah, there's no question he's putting it on the coaching. Now, he conveniently leaves out that the best players against the run at all three levels aren't on the team right now in Christian Barmore, Juwan Bentley, and Jabril Peppers. He had them last year.
He did.
He and his son did. He had them at their disposal last year. It was Judon and Gonzalez, guys in the pass defense, that were out. But the middle of the defense had its best players and doesn't have it this year. I'm not saying that's the be-all, end-all. The coaching hasn't been great. I didn't love when Gerard Mayo said, I don't know if it was in the Zoom or the Greg Hill show this morning, you know, it's not X's and O's. It's about,
Jimmy's and Joe's.
Well, so you're saying it's not coaching. Coaching's not a problem.
Right.
DeMarcus Covington did that a couple weeks ago. It's not about scheme. It's not about X's and O's. They seem to be in CYA mode a little bit there, covering their asses and just putting it on the players' effort, technique, fits, all these various things. It's not scheme. So you're going to tell me there's nothing you could have done to help out when you see they're struggling? maybe something, anything to help out?
I think there's a lot of things they probably could have done to help out. But at the end of the day, if you're missing tackles and getting pushed around, you're missing tackles getting pushed around. I mean, there's not much you can do about that. By the way, did you see Washington against Iowa this past week? Iowa ran all over them. That kid, their running back, 166 yards rushing. It was the first time the Huskies' defense didn't look so great. So that may fly in the face of the whole Steve Belichick thing. Either way, I'd take that and any part of last year's defense and what they looked like over what you're seeing here. The only thing I'd say to Bill Belichick, if he was, you know, wanted to call in and chat about this, was
come on, Bill.
The only thing I'd say is that the offense, you're right, he couldn't score any points because the offense was a joke. And whether or not he wants to take any credit or responsibility for the offense being so bad the last couple of years, the way he deprioritized the quarterback position, the way he sort of refused to put anybody around Mac Jones after that first year when they spent on Aguilar and Jonnu Smith and, you know, Hunter Henry and all those guys. After that, I mean, that was it. And I think that if you sort of look at the way the defense has gone down and over these last two games, the way the offense has looked better, I don't know if it's even, but I do think that there's something to be said for that, right? Under Belichick, I don't know that Drake May and this offense would be doing better because I don't think he would have brought in Van Pelt. He would have had one of his friends running the offense, and who knows what it would have looked like. The defense would have been better, probably. I agree with that. I think everybody agrees with that. But he proved, to me anyway, and I think to a lot of other people, incapable of putting an offense together, of coaching an offense, of getting coaches in place for an offense, of connecting with quarterbacks, of valuing wide receivers, like all the stuff that you need to do in the modern NFL in order to have a functional offense. I mean, ever since Brady left, they really never had one, except for that one Mac Jones year, and they dismantled it immediately. So it's like, you know, I think he lost a lot of credibility as far as that's concerned. He still has it on defense. But people saying, oh, man, if Belichick was here, the defense would be so much better. Yeah, it would be, but how much worse would the offense be? And what do you think he'd be doing with Drake May? You think he'd be helping Drake May? Do you think he'd play Drake May?
Do you think Drake May?
Maybe not. He might not even drafted him. Like, he might have said, nah, you know what? Forget the quarterback. And listen, I was one who was talking about those type of things and signing someone like Russell Wilson for $1 million, who looked very good yesterday against the New York Jets. But I digress. Either way, yeah, I'm sort of with you. I don't even know if he'd be here. And if he was here, I don't know if Bill would have played him. I don't know if he'd have seen the field until the end of the season. Like, these are all things you have to keep in mind when you start pining for the days of Bill Belichick. Like, last year's team was dreadful. Dreadful.
Awful.
It's just an unwatchable just piece of garbage. And, like, yeah, the defense was a little better, but they were losing games 10-6, 6-0, 10-7 in the middle of the season. Like, no one wants to watch that.
Bill Belichick deserved to lose his job.
Yes.
Based on the trend and last year. That was a fireable season. It could be a fireable season for Gerard Mayo. Both could be true. You could have back-to-back really bad seasons.
Definitely.
With really bad coaching jobs. Would the defense be better with Bill Belichick here? 100%.
Absolutely.
I'll even give you
Steve Belichick, even though they got smoked by Iowa. I'd even give you him.
I firmly believe they'd be better coached. Yep. They'd be better continuity. They would be a better defense. I have no idea what the offense would be. You're 100% right. And I also know Bill is very convenient in, like, he seems to like to take the credit for success and avoid the blame for failure. And, like, I don't ever remember when he hired Matt Patricia and he said, if this doesn't work, blame me. Well, it didn't work, and I don't remember where he ever said, so just blame me, I screwed up. Like, he kind of just moved on, as he tends to do, brush him under the rug. I would have more faith in him or give him more credibility or stock if he had talked in week one after the Patriots won and Gerard Mayo was getting a Gatorade bath. And as you said, people were praising Mayo for having his team ready, tackling, being in shape, taking him to the hill.
He had nothing
all
to say.
All of that.
He didn't say a word about that.
He was whispers. Yeah. Now he's bullying because the argument is in his favor. I also thought it was interesting in there. He tried to be coy about it. The Patriots last year in yards per carry were this. Like, just say we.
This is Belichick's fault.
Yeah, no, it was Belichick's fault. A lot of the problems last year were Bill Belichick's fault. You wouldn't talk to your assistant coaches. You wouldn't talk to your quarterback. You had broken your quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it was your fault. Just like this year, I do think a lot of it is Gerard Mayo's fault. That comes with the job.
It does.
But you can't pick and choose when you kind of acknowledge that and just cherry pick the good and ignore the bad. You were a dismal football team last year. Dismal. In a lot of ways, that this year's team is dismal. Penalties, being undisciplined. All of that stuff was a problem. Now, it continues to be a problem, and that's a problem for Robert Kraft because you made the change with an eye on fixing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
What does Mayo like to say? Solutions? We're a solutions-based business?
Right.
You thought you had a solution.
Very corporate.
You picked a solution, unfortunately, the solution doesn't seem to be working.
No, no, it does not. Let's take a look now at our weekly league leaders and who's circling the drain, presented by Drains by James. Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Who's circling the drain, Andy?
I'm going to go with Jalen Polk. I think he is circling the drain on the field, off the field, in his own head, in his own body. Like, just, it is so, so bad right now for him. And it is, like, I think he can save it. I think it's still salvageable. I keep bringing up the idea. Maybe he needs to talk to Kayshon Booty. And because Kayshon Booty lived this.
Yep.
He had a bad start to his career in New England, and there were questions about where he was going and what he was doing and how he was handling himself.
And as a sixth-round pick, I don't think anybody was expecting much.
Right, to get his grind right, to get any of these cliches
going. Closed all his gambling apps. That's one thing.
Maybe. Maybe. And maybe Booty would say, hey, maybe Jalen just shut the social media off for a little while.
Completely, yeah.
Don't be posting vague photos after games, after you drop the ball. And as Gerard Mayo said, if you go out and say, I have the best hands in the league, well, you sure as poo better go out and catch the ball. If you don't, that's on you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think,
or at least stand up, you know, not fall down in the middle of the
That is true.
Although he wasn't the only one to do that.
He never said he had great feet, though.
It's true, he didn't. And then one of those passes, by the way, I didn't think was necessarily his fault. The first one he should have had. The second one I thought was a hospital ball by May. But either way, who's
mix in a catch.
That's true.
That'd so be, stop circling the drain, plug the drain up for just a little bit, swim around in the toilet, and get your head above water.
Yeah. All right. Who's leading the league? I'm going to say Major League Baseball, Yankees and Dodgers in the World Series. I mean, what else do you want right there? That's a good World Series. And I say that as the number one Yankee hater in the world and someone who's annoyed by the Dodgers having all these ex-Red Sox on the team and going all the way out there. But they finished off the Mets yesterday. They got the Yankees coming up. I think game one is on Friday. And listen, you got LA, you got New York, that's about as good as it gets. So yeah, I'd say Major League Baseball could be a nice little coup for them here in October going into November here with this World Series. All right, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We're going to talk about this locker room because it seems to be breaking down, and we'll go over everything that everybody said here in the last 24 hours.
Uh-oh.
It's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of words flying around here. We'll get to all that next.